Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And we're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studios. Home is so much more than a house. It's the home of your dreams. And for 30 years, they've been making it better. Rocket Mortgage, push button. Get mortgage. And the big news from the weekend, of course, is Tyson Fury defeating Deontay Wilder in Las Vegas. And now joining us to talk about it is the two-time welterweight world champion, Sean Porter, who was working the desk as an analyst of that heavyweight fight between Deontay Wilder and Tyson Fury, the rematch on Saturday. And he did a great job, including working the pre-fight, all the pay-per-view stuff, and also the post-fight shows as well. And there's a lot in the aftermath of this fight, as Tyson Fury does get the TKO over Deontay Wilder. Sean Porter, thanks for joining us. How are you?
I tell you what, man, I'm still feeling it. That was an amazing night and an amazing Tyson Fury that we saw.
How surprised were you by the outcome?
I wasn't surprised. Reason being is because it's the heavyweight division. Anything can happen. You know, it's always either fighter in the heavyweight division always has that puncher's chance. I was pleasantly surprised, but more so surprised, I was satisfied with the way Tyson Fury got it done. He got it done in just a very tactical and intelligent form, and it's very rare what we saw the other night.
Yeah, I would say casual boxing fans were probably maybe sleeping from what happened in the first fight. And Fury said this multiple times. He wasn't even at his best in that first fight. And many still thought he should have won that fight. So him being in better shape and a better spot in his life probably helped greatly in this second one.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's exactly, leading into the fight. That was one thing. I said that was the most intriguing component to this fight, is that both fighters are healthy going into the ring. Tyson Fury, more so from a psychological standpoint, having gone through so much and trying to get prepared for Deontay Wilder the first time, I just knew he wouldn't be starting over and it wouldn't be as new as it was that first time around. And then Deontay also had some injuries leading into the first fight as well. So I thought that both guys were going to be 100% in this fight. And I think not only was Tyson 100% physically, but also mentally and so mentally prepared for everything he was going to have to do in the ring. And that also includes prepared mentally to think and to make quick adjustments the way that he did in terms of going at Deontay Wilder the way that he went at Deontay Wilder. And then also his punch selection was amazing as well. He had strong jabs, strong finishing right hand, and then, you know, the will to stand there with Deontay and try to lean on Deontay and put that 270 frame on Deontay was just absolutely amazing and intelligent on Tyson's behalf.
Sean Porter, the two-time welterweight champion, joins us right now on the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio as we recap Deontay Wilder and Tyson Fury's second fight, where Tyson Fury gets a TKO in round 7. This story of Tyson Fury, we had him on about 12 days ago And he was going through his entire journey, you know, wanted to beat Klitschko, beats Klitschko, told everyone he was going to be able to before anyone knew who he was. Then he went through the battle of depression and addiction, and he was one point at 400 pounds, and no one would have thought a comeback was possible besides himself. To see where he is now, Sean, as someone that's a fighter, as someone that's a boxer like yourself, this story, it's one of the great comeback stories. It's really something to watch and witness.
I would say it's definitely one of the greatest comeback stories in boxing history. People don't really recognize this, and I think it's becoming more familiar now to the mass public, but there really is something, you know, when it pertains to mental health, that really does hold a lot of people back. Now, you're talking about the average person who just has a 9-to-5 who may have mental health issues. They can't work that 9-to-5 job. Now think about being a grown man in such a vicious, grueling sport, not only in the night of the sport, but leading up to in training camp. Now, he has so much to come back from. That includes 400 pounds, but just so much from a mental and emotional standpoint that you really never would have thought that he would be here right now beating Deontay Wilder the way that he beat Deontay. And that says a lot. Not just about him as an athlete or as a boxer, but a lot about him as a human being, and a lot of him about him as a Christian, to believe in God and have faith that he could come back from everything that he was into.
And we know mental health is such a big part of our society, and now it's being more accepted. But a story like this probably inspires people that are apprehensive to get help, to get that help. And we also just talk about the nature of the sport. You know, I understand that there's a lot of money on the line, and you guys love what you do, but when you're getting hit in the head, even in victories, you know, it's got to take a, you know, mental toll on a person as well, and a lot of people forget about that because we just look at fighters and we expect them to entertain for us.
Absolutely. People don't take a look at everything that goes into making a world champion, and it's like I said on a telecast, it's not just who's the fastest or who's the strongest or... Sometimes it's not even who has the most will and heart at the end of the night. There's all these intangibles, and most of them are you can't even see on the surface. Most of the intangibles are on the inside, and I think that Tyson Fury really proved that on Saturday night.
Sean Porter here with us, the 2-time welterweight world champion, did a great job covering Fury and Wilder 2 for Fox. Sean also works as a Fox Sports boxing analyst on Inside PBC Boxing on Fox and FS1 and for Fox PBC Fight Nights. When we get to Deontay Wilder, he talks about the costume afterwards, the 40-pound costume, how it made his legs get taken out of the fight, and that was a big factor into it. Are you buying that?
Honestly, I'm not. The reason I'm not buying that is because I know from my own experience, that costume doesn't go on until you're about to leave your locker room. That costume is not something you've worn throughout the day. It's not even something that you've worn for an hour or two in the locker room. That's something that Deontay put on at most 20 minutes before he got ready to walk to the ring. So you're talking about him having that on for a very short amount of time. But on top of that, we did see in the locker room a majority of the evening, only was he up on his feet, he was pacing back and forth through the room. I think he had a lot going on from a mental standpoint that kind of wore him out. And I think that before he got to the ring, he may have been feeling some things prior to getting in the ring that night. And I think that those things may have also weighed on his mind and also his body prior to that first bell ringing. But I assure you this, if you watch the fight, you see Tyson Fury pressuring Deontay Wilder, and he didn't pressure Deontay Wilder the way someone like myself would pressure another fighter. I pressure guys with a lot of movement and a lot of punches. Tyson Fury didn't do that. He was able to step forward and kind of trail Deontay Wilder, but another thing he did was pump his jab hand. Pumping his jab hand is almost like a feint, which really, it didn't allow Deontay Wilder to relax. He always had to think, what punch is coming and when is it coming? And there's a lot more ways to wear a guy down. You wear a guy down mentally just as much as you can physically. And I think that the way Tyson Fury went at Deontay Wilder and the way he pumped that jab without even throwing it out, but just those feints, it really did. It wore down Deontay Wilder in a matter of rounds. And then, of course, we saw when he did connect, Tyson Fury connected with those right hands and straight left. It did. Those also took a toll very quickly on Deontay Wilder as well.
Sean Porter here with us. And also the stories, I think, were changed, you know, because after the fight, you know, I heard him speak in the ring, and he was saying how he's going through a lot of stuff with his leg going into the fight, and then you wake up today and you read that it was the excuse of the costume was being made. So that's why I also raise an eyebrow when he talks about that costume too.
Yeah, I'm not sure. We did see in the locker room after the fight. I don't know if this was on TV, but his wife was on the floor rubbing his legs, and you know, he was sitting there, I'm sure, very exhausted from the night, but you could tell that there was some focus being paid attention to on the legs. So I'm really not sure what to make of it. You know, Timothy Bradley, he's an awesome person, but he's really doing a fantastic job from an analytical perspective as well. He says right after the fight, Deontay Wilder says that his leg was hurting prior to the fight. And then I looked at Tim, and Tim said to me simply, "See, I told you all fighters lie." And that resonated with me, because I do know that for a fact. We'll do an interview, we'll sound and feel very confident, but we may have something lingering. We may have something going on. So, you know, the thing is, Deontay didn't say firsthand that something was wrong. So on the backside of it, when you see that the fight didn't go his way and then he's saying something is wrong, it does sound like an excuse. However, you know, in a trilogy, another fight between these two, you got to wonder if both guys are 100% what happened.
Wrapping up with Sean Porter, who joins on the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. I read the Ioli piece, Kevin Ioli, and clearly Deontay Wilder is not happy with the assistant trainer and Mark Breland for stopping the fight. Did you think that was the right decision?
Yeah, it was the right decision. That 100% was the right decision. I think they stopped it in the sixth.
Seventh.
And I felt like he should have... I'm sorry?
They stopped in the seventh.
Seventh. And I thought it should have been stopped in the sixth. I thought at that point Deontay Wilder wasn't going to be able to make any adjustments. I thought that he was very worn down, and I didn't think the fight was going to get any better for him. A lot of people think that, again, like I said at the beginning of the interview, everyone thinks that the heavyweight always has that puncher chance. And even though that's true, at the end of the day, it's just a sport. It's just a win, and it's just a loss. Your life is more important than all of that, than the sport, than the win, or the loss. And that's why I would have stopped it even earlier, maybe even the sixth round, because I felt like his life was on the line more than a sport or a win or a loss.
Is that tough for a boxer to understand? Because, you know, a lot of boxers want to get dragged out of there, you know, knocked out if instead of just having their corner throw in the towel. And Wilder said that they talked about it. And he said, you let him go. He still thought he had five rounds left in him. I agree with you. I didn't. I thought the fight was over in the seventh. But is that tough to understand? And what does that do for the future, you know, if you're not happy with an assistant trainer for throwing in the towel? Do you think Wilder over time will eventually understand it?
So I'm going to tell you this. At the level that those guys are performing at the world championship level, it's always hard for the fighter to understand when the towel is being thrown in, or when they're being told to stop or to quit. Reason being is because at this level, we didn't get here by accident. We didn't get here overnight. We didn't get here by the luck of a draw. We all have worked hard to get to this point, and in doing so, we beat a lot of guys, and in a lot of ways, we feel invincible. So when we're on the other side of it, it's really hard for us to really fathom being on that side. It's almost like we're in denial. It's almost like, I still got some more in me. I can still go. But at the end of the day, that's why we have a corner. That's why we have refs, doctors, everyone who can look out for us, because at the end of the day, we will not look out for ourselves. And it's not because we aren't smart. It's just because we have that warrior spirit and that God complex where we feel like we can always run through that wall, even when it's standing right there in front of us and we're not being... getting through it.
So just to expand off that, for you, you were at once 24-0-1, and then you had your first loss. How did you get over that? Like, how long did it take you to get over the loss?
Oh, it's very tough. It's very tough because, again, you're in that place that you've never been at before. The good thing for me is I had had a lot of fights as an amateur. I had close to 300 fights as an amateur. So I knew what it felt like to win, and obviously I knew what it felt like to win, but I also knew what it felt like to lose. So the first time around as a professional, it was kind of that wake-up call. It was like, get everything in the order, come back stronger, come back better than you've ever been, and don't allow that to happen again. And then, it's just a growing process. It's a learning curve. It's a curve that you always hope happens in the gym, and you never hope happens, or you always hope it doesn't happen on the night of the big event. But when it does happen, it's a big pill to swallow, but you have to remind yourself that it's not the end of the world, and as long as you want to remain in this sport and continue to be at this level, get over it, get past it, and look forward to something big to come. That's my advice to Deontay Wilder.
Following this fight, how do you view the state of boxing, Sean Porter?
This did it. I really do think that this brought the spark back to boxing. I think now it's up to guys like myself, Terrence Crawford, even Manny Pacquiao, the young dogs out there like Lomachenko, Gary Russell. I mean, the list goes on. There's a whole host of guys out there right now who are world champions or on the brink of being a world champion that can keep this sport exactly where it is and then continue to drive it forward instead of it going back some steps. I think right now we took a huge leap, and I think those leaps are going to continue after Saturday night.
What's next for you?
You know, I'm waiting to find out. I just named a few of those guys, Manny Pacquiao, even Terrence Crawford. I'm waiting to find out who it's going to be. I want it to be big. You know, after being on a part of this event, I can't see myself not being a part of an event like this and actually being the focal point of the event. So that's what I want. I want something big, just like the other night. And I know that whoever I get in the ring with will be ready to razzle and dazzle the crowd like those guys did the other night.
So we next look for this rematch between Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder. You know that Wilder wants the rematch in the clause of the agreement. Just wondering, though, when we look at a different fighter, Anthony Joshua against Tyson Fury, how do you think that one would play out?
You know what? I think that what we saw the other night was not a fluke. What we saw the other night was not Tyson Fury doing something one time and never being able to do it again. Tyson Fury has all of the intangibles, all of the goods to make adjustments and beat any fighter out there in the division. I always said whoever won this fight will be the number one guy. Tyson Fury is the number one guy out there, and anyone getting in his way is going to have a heck of a time beating him. That includes Anthony Joshua. I do think it will be a good fight, an exciting fight, but I think that's a fight that Tyson Fury gets the upper hand on.
He's Sean Porter. Sean, can't wait to see you back in the ring. Good luck, and keep up the great work with Fox. Thanks for making a few minutes for us.
You got it, man. Thank you so much.
There's Sean Porter, 20 after the hour. It's the Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. Coming right back.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show. The Zach Gelb Show is on the air across the nation on CBS Sports Radio. Here's Zach Gelb.
And CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line is 855-212-4227. It's sponsored by our good friends at Geico. Whether you own or rent, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and auto insurance. Having a home is hard work, so get a quote at geico.com. Easy. Let's go to Gene in Ohio. He's next up with Zach Gelb on CBS Sports Radio. Yeah. Gene, what's happening, man?
Yeah, Zach. Hey, great interview with the guy just now, the welterweight, the Porter.
Sean Porter, sure.
Hey. Yeah. I want... You guys taught me a lot more about this Tyson. Like I was telling your dispatcher, I never heard of none of this stuff about substance abuse or mental illness that this guy went through. So I got a lot more respect for him. God bless him that he overcame all that. Like you were saying, you rated up there with the great comebacks in history, at least boxing. And I was going to ask you if you ever heard. Or if you ever watched the movie Bleed for this, Vinny Pazienzo, that was another great story. about him breaking his neck back in the 90s and then coming back and winning two more world titles?
No, I haven't seen the movie, but I'll tell you this. With the Tyson Fury story, it's really surreal because, and he even said it, that fight, the first one between Fury and Wilder, it basically kind of defines his life and resembles his life where he was down. Everyone thought he was out because if you remember, the referee in that fight is counting to 5-6, and he looks like he's knocked out. Wilder thinks he won the fight, and the next thing you know, he gets back up. And not only gets back up, continues to start throwing punches. You know, he threw punches in the rest of that round, in that 12th round. And that's the story of really Tyson Fury. He wins, beats Klitschko, he goes through this down part in his life, where he told people even before the fight, after this fight, he was going to be very depressed, you know, no matter win or lose. And he was battling a lot of stuff. And still even to this day, he battles a lot of stuff. Where he is, you know, he talks about that routine. And every Sunday, he has suicidal thoughts. Now, I really wonder what he was feeling on Sunday. I wonder that. Because, Mike, you heard him say that he goes through that routine, and most people, they look forward to Friday. He looks most forward to Monday because that's when he gets back to his routine. Coming off that fight on Saturday, I wonder what he was truly feeling on Sunday. Like, he has the celebration in Las Vegas. I wonder if that was the first time in a long time on a Sunday where he didn't have any of those thoughts. I don't know the answer to that, obviously.
Yeah, that's a really great point, Zach, and a really interesting question, and only obviously something he could answer getting inside of his head. But it's a fascinating conversation when you look at, this is the pinnacle of my life. This is the, you know, the greatest moment of my career, let's say. And then you get into some of the Sundays and what he talked about and the anxiety and the depression that would seek in on Sundays and how hard he's worked with that. You know, my belief is he probably had a moment where he reflected back and smiled and was able to look forward on everything. I think he probably had a great Sunday, but it is an interesting comment when you bring up, and you know, sort of the human nature of everything. Even if you're at the highest of highs, you're still a human being and you go through stuff. So incredible journey. It was awesome to hear all of that, but I'm thinking he was good on Sunday.
And then on November 28, 2015, he beats Klitschko. Then we don't see him fight again until June 9th, 2018. From there, he has won 2, 3, 4, 5 fights, had the one draw against Wilder. And you see some of these photos. He must have been 400 pounds. And that's not exaggerating. They did that side-by-side photo where he's flexing and has that big belly through with all he's going through and completely out of shape. You see that photo into what was able to be transformed a few days before the fight. On what was Saturday, February 22nd, it's unreal. You couldn't write that script. To the rise that it was, to what he was able to do, his dad naming him, his dad's a fighter too, his dad named him after Mike Tyson. And Tyson Fury was a premature baby. And he thought that his son was going to be a fighter from day one, moving around the entire life, hence the name the Gypsy King, and getting that title and what it means, the significance. They explained it on the broadcast. And to see what he's been able to do when you get knocked down, to be able to get back up, and not only get back up, you defeat a titan in the sport. And Deontay Wilder, who's undefeated. And all throughout this, everyone doubted him. He said he was going to beat Klitschko. You can't beat Klitschko. He ends up beating Klitschko. He says he's going to beat Fury. There's those videos of him when he was down, out of shape, saying he's coming back to defeat Deontay Wilder. First fight, almost beat him, should have beat him. They get the rematch, and he knocks him out in the 7th round. Wilder's camp had to throw in the towel. And it's the right move, too. It was the right move to throw in that towel. And I understand those human emotions. You're watching the fight. You're not thinking about the well-being of Deontay Wilder. And then you see the photos afterwards. And you knew the fight was over. But you see those photos afterwards and how cut up and bloody and the ear and the lip. That one lip photo of Deontay Wilder. He was done. But in his mind, in Wilder's mind, he has the nastiest knockout punch. And he's never lost before. So he's going to bet on himself. And he was waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting to deliver that knockout punch. And he was never able to do so. And Breland in his corner, who now Wilder says he's not going to be part of his corner during fight night, Breland had the courage to throw in the towel. And that's tough for the fighter to understand. That's tough for the boxer to understand, because you're thinking you could go on out there and get the victory still, because you're relying on your abilities on what got you there. But any sane person watching that fight knew that that fight was over. And how many times did Wilder try to land that big punch and he had no force on his punch? And you saw how quickly those legs gave out. I first started to realize it in the third round after he got knocked down the first time. And there's other times in the fight he's stumbling around, going into the ropes, you know, tripping and all that. And when you see in that fourth round, that ear bleeding, and Wilder tries to wind up to land a big punch and couldn't, Fury just kept on gaining off that momentum. Whether it was the momentum at the end of the second when Wilder missed, and then in the third, Fury comes out and is hammering him with punches, and the same thing happened really in the fourth. Wilder trying to land that big punch, couldn't. In the fifth, it was all Fury throughout. And right in that fourth round, when he couldn't land that big punch, I looked at my buddy that I was watching the fight with. I said, this is over. It's done. And then you knew where the confidence of Fury was when he's literally licking the blood off the ear and neck of Deontay Wilder. And then finally they called it in the seventh. And if they didn't call it in the seventh, it would have been called eventually soon after that. Heck, Sean Porter, he thought the fight should have been called in the sixth. So unless if you're the biggest Deontay Wilder fan, or unless if you're Wilder, where you just think you're going to eventually land that punch, you knew that it was the right decision to call the fight. But let's not make that take away from the story that is Tyson Fury. Because when we do this job for a living, we get to interact with a lot of athletes. And we get to hear a lot of stories. Not much tops this story, where you look at where he was and how you could relate to it. Because if you are someone in this world, you know someone that has dealt through tough times, whether it's with drugs or whether it's with mental health, and you could relate to him, whether it's you individually, the person going through it, or someone close to you that has gone through it. And when you see how a guy was at the lowest of lows on not only just with himself, but this is getting talked about on a national stage. That's how much clout and fame this guy has. He's in such a huge spotlight. And when you see him get knocked down, to be able to get back up and fight through this, and not only fight through this, but get back to the top, it's something we could all learn from. It really is. And if you're going through something, you may be afraid to say you need help, but don't be. Because you could go on out there and get help and be in a better spot. Maybe we'll play some audio of what he said to us a few weeks ago. Because I remember he said to us on air that he would wake up, even if it was a bright sunny day, 90 degrees, sun out, in his mind it was gray, and he was thinking, he would pray at night, God, please take my life. Please kill me. And now look what he's doing. And that's why after the fight, it's one thing to win the fight, but then just to see that pure elation when he's singing American Pie in the ring, or he's doing the Bronze Bomber chant, you know, and having a little fun afterwards, it's crazy. It really is crazy to see where we've come from. Do we have that audio from inside the nightclub afterwards? Here it is real quickly.
There was three Bronze Bombers in the air. Gypsy kick from England, shot one down.
And who would thought that Tyson Fury would be able to have that joyful moment from where he was? A remarkable story. Take a timeout. Come on back.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show. The Zach Gelb Show is on the air.
I enjoy the show, and you're a very sharp young man, and I enjoy everything that you're saying.
Here's Zach Gelb.
Tomorrow night at 11 Eastern, Mountain West regular season champ San Diego State welcomes Colorado State, and you can watch it on CBS Sports. A whole lot to do coming up in 15 minutes on the 40th anniversary of the USA winning gold, defeating Finland. And we also had the 40th anniversary of them beating the Soviets on Saturday in the Miracle on Ice game. The captain of that team, Mike Ruzioni, will join us live on the show in 15 minutes. Can't wait for that. Also coming up at 9:20 p.m. Eastern, 6:20 p.m. Pacific, we're going to replay a part of our conversation from a week and a half ago with Tyson Fury that you don't want to miss, and really just try to illustrate to you what he's been going through and what he did go through and why what we did see on Saturday night was truly inspirational and unbelievable. And we still have the closing bell to hit as well. But without further ado, it's time to play a little game that I like to call Onsides Offsides that we do each and every Monday and Friday on the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Zach's taking on the most polarizing issues in sports. Which side of the line of scrimmage will he end up on?
Offside. Defense number 69.
It's Onsides, Offsides with Zach Gelb on CBS Sports Radio.
Mikey B, what do you got for me in the world of sports?
All right, let's start it off with the Milwaukee Bucks, are the first team in the NBA to clinch a playoff spot this season. With Washington's loss to Chicago on Sunday, it ensured that the Bucks will be in the playoffs in May. The 48-8 Bucks are the earliest team to clinch a playoff spot in 15 years. If Milwaukee goes 22-4, they will finish with 70 wins. Onside or offside, the Milwaukee Bucks will win 70 games this season.
And the Bucks right now are up 76-61 on the Wizards, so it's not over yet, but I'm going to assume that the Bucks will get their 49th victory tonight. 22-4 would really be something. There's definitely a shot that they're going to do it, but I think they're going to reach like a victory or two just short. Remember, end of the season, you want to rest guys up and things along those nature. So the Bucks could do it, but I'm going to say they get like 68, 69 wins and maybe have five or six losses instead of only four losses to get to that 70 win mark. So I'll go offsides on this one.
Offside.
Number two.
Alex Ovechkin became the eighth NHL player to score 700 career goals, reaching the milestone in the third period of the Capitals' 3-2 loss to the New Jersey Devils on Saturday. The all-time leader is Wayne Gretzky at 894 goals. Ovechkin is 34 and has showed no signs of slowing down. Onside or offsides, Ovi will pass Wayne Gretzky as NHL's all-time goal scorer.
Well, you're right. He's shown zero signs of slowing down because last year he had 51 goals. This year he's at 42. And the year before that, he had 49. In that 2016-2017 season, he only had 33. So if you look at this stretch, actually, from 2013 to now, the goals are at 51, 53, 50, 33, 49, 51, and 42. And he's only 61 games in this year. So you look at this from a historical standpoint. In front of him, 708, 717, 731, 741, 766, and you also have Gordie Howe, who's at 801. So you have that's Gartner, Esposito, Dion, Hull, Jager, and Gordie Howe. Then you have the great one in reign, Gretzky, at 894. No one ever thought that would be broken. So he's at 34 years old right now. He's going to need about 200 goals left in his career. If he goes out there and has a 50-goal season next year and a 50-goal season after that, he's gonna be at least number two on this list. There's no doubt in my mind that when it's all said and done, Ovechkin, at the worst case possible, is going to be number two on this list. Is he going to be number one? I think he is. And I never thought I would say that. And I heard Sharp bring it up on DA's show when they had Patrick Sharp in studio. And that's the first time I ever thought about that. When you heard about this quest for Ovechkin to get to 700. I'm going to say, and a lot of things have to go in his favor, but I think he's going to stay healthy. I think he's going to be in a good spot. And Gretzky got to 700 like years. I think it was like at the age of 29. And you look at some of Gretzky's seasons and he's had like 200 points. It's ridiculous what he did. It's video game like what he did. But I'm going to say that when it's all said and done, Ovechkin is going to be number one. He's going to just get there. So I'll go onsides on that one. Ovi will pass Wayne Gretzky as the NHL's all-time leading goal scorer. And I can't believe I just said that. I'm really shocked. I never thought that would ever be broken.
Tyson Fury is a heavyweight champion, dominating Deontay Wilder in their title rematch Saturday night before Wilder's corner threw in the towel in the seventh round. It was the first loss for Wilder in 44 fights, and it came in the 11th defense of the title he won back in 2015. Onside or offside, the public will have as much interest in Fury versus Wilder 3 as they did on Saturday night.
Offsides, there'll be interest. There's going to be great interest. If you ask me right now, am I watching Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder in the rematch part 3? Absolutely, it's not even a thought. But as much interest coming off a draw where many thought that Fury should have won the first time, it won't be as much interest. There will be a great amount of interest, a great amount of buzz, but to have more interest coming off fight one to fight two, then from fight two to fight three, I think a lot of people will say, well, I watched the second fight, and I saw what Tyson Fury did. I don't want to hear about Deontay Wilder with the excuses with his leg or with the costume and all that. So I believe many people, when that fight happens again, would think that Tyson Fury is going to win it. And then wouldn't it be the best thing for boxing would then be, and I don't want this to happen because I'll be rooting for our guy in Tyson Fury. The best thing for boxing then on that rematch, the third time in the trilogy, would be for Deontay Wilder to win. But would there be as much buzz going into the fight? No, I don't think there would be. So offsides.
Offside.
Number four.
A Zamboni driver is getting the credit for the first emergency backup goalie win in NHL history. David Ayers came in after both regular goaltenders were injured in the Carolina Hurricanes win over the Maple Leafs 6-3 in Toronto. The 42-year-old Zamboni driver for Toronto's AHL affiliate stopped 8 of 10 shots in the victory. Onside or offside, if you had to come in from the stands for one night at one position, goaltender would be your dream scenario.
This is my favorite rule in sports, by the way, when this does happen. And I remember there was a kid from Temple University a few years ago that was the emergency goaltender. And it was so neat. And I didn't know the kid, but it was just neat. This kid from Temple who was playing club hockey, and I guess he did graduate, ends up being the emergency goaltender. It was awesome. And this guy, I heard him on with DA this morning. He's eating a Reuben sandwich. And it was either before or afterwards. I don't remember the whole thing. But this guy, he was on DA's show. He sits in a certain spot in the arena each and every time, or stands. And the next thing you know, he's on the ice, allows a few goals, then making saves and wins, and gets the big-time beer bath and champagne bath in the locker room afterwards. So it's a great story. And I love when it happens, when a regular guy just gets inserted into an NHL game and boom, the next thing you know, he makes a few saves. But if I could go into any sport for one night and I had the ability to perform decent, quarterback in the NFL. Let me take over, emergency quarterback, two-minute drill. First quarterback gets knocked out. Then the second quarterback gets knocked out. Then the third string quarterback gets knocked out. They put Zach Gelb in there with about a minute 30 left. First and 10 from the 30-yard line, the other team's 30, and I got to complete a few passes or hand the ball off and get a victory. I'm all in on that. So as cool as goalie would be, offsides, quarterback, NFL team, biggest sport, biggest position, let me be the star and throw a touchdown on the 1-yard line when everyone thinks a run's happening. I won't throw an interception like Russell Wilson. I'll deliver a nice touchdown to the tight end. So offsides there.
Down goes Brady. Here comes in Gelb. All right, during halftime of the Ole Miss.
It would be down goes Brady. Then yes. Insert the backup, and then, whatever emergency quarterback on the roster gets hurt, then it would be Zach Gelb.
And finally, during an Ole Miss basketball game, Marianne, who's
Gelb,
80.
Gelb, Stidham, some wide receiver, and then
the punter.
Yours truly.
Yeah. I want to see this. Then we'll book you on your own show.
I'll be an Uber Eats guest on Mikey B's Uber Eats podcast.
I love it. We'll do it. All right. And finally, during an Ole Miss basketball game, one of those gimmick halftime events, you get the putt. It was a 94-foot putt. 84-year-old Marianne sunk the putt. She won a car. let's give you 10 putts. Onside, offside, Zach, you're making one of those 10 putts 94 feet out.
If you give me 10 half-court shots, I could do it. 10 putts from 94 feet out? Yeah, I'll be honest here. I'm going to say offsides. I would not be able to do that.
Offside.
I think I'd come close. I think I'd come close eventually, but only 10 tries. You give me 100, sure, I say yes. 10 tries? No, not so much. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio, right here coast to coast. We're going to take a timeout when we come on back. The 40th anniversary of the 1980 USA men's hockey team winning gold, defeating Finland 40 years ago today. When we come back, we're going to be joined by the captain of that team. And that's going to be Mike Arruzioni. We will relive the victory up against the Soviets and also the victory up against Finland and what that team means to him 40 years later.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.